It's called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me? You really do? Anybody on your watch? Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet, a prophet.
Goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreams and karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the section. Nah, I was legends, rest in peace, Pop's a legend, Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, night coasting, blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them. Never write about me like him. Never make me think wrong. Just make me angry. Never make me go underdog.
And never talk about who's gonna stop me. Well, ain't nobody gonna stop me. Not a heavyweight in the world fast enough to stop me. So ordinarily, I would have just let the last podcast just marinate for y'all. You know, just the last podcast was the Super Bowl podcast that we did, the Super Bowl wrap-up show. We talked about the Eagles, Patriots, and all that stuff. I taped that the Monday after the Super Bowl, and then posted it a couple of days later, and I'm still letting that one breathe, y'all, so y'all go check that out. But then the NBA trade deadline happened, and here we are on again on a Saturday night, coming back at you guys on a late night tip. Once again, it's February 10th of 2018. It's the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast, the preseason podcast of the year. Your boy Jay Hicks is back again, and I have a treat for you guys. Everybody has been talking about the NBA trade deadline, specifically one team in particular, the Cavaliers of Cleveland, right? And as you guys know, if you follow the podcast at all, you know that I am from Cleveland, and I am a lifelong Cleveland sports fan, and that I have family members who are contributors frequently to this podcast who are also lifelong Cleveland natives and Cleveland sports fans, and they're older than I am, so they've been doing this a lot longer than me, you know what I mean? They are joining us here for this podcast tonight. I got my man Vince Hicks, my cousin Vince, and his brother, my cousin Mark Hicks, on the Your Ad Here hotline. Mark, Vince, how y'all feeling this evening?
Good. What's going on? What's happening?
What's up, cousin? How you feeling?
I'm doing good, man. And it's late, you know what I'm saying? But we got to bring that energy, y'all, because the Cavs season warrants it. Because the players don't have any damn energy. So
they need some energy.
Right. So, you know, somebody got to have some energy out this boy. You know what I mean? It might as well be us. I have compiled. I've compiled 12 questions. And I don't even know if we're going to get to them all, to be honest with you. But I've compiled a list of 12 questions all about the Cavs that I want to speak to y'all about. So this is going to be a Cavs-centered type of podcast tonight. And I really highly encourage everybody to listen to it, of course, but specifically my Cleveland folks, you guys are really going to enjoy this. We did the math before we started recording. So between Mark's, I think he said 38 years of fandom of the Cavs, Vince's 33 years of fandom, and my 27 years of fandom, we're looking at a combined 98 years of experience watching this team, y'all. This is not, these opinions expressed tonight on this podcast are expressed from highly in tune individuals to this franchise. We're not just some Johnny come latelys because LeBron's on the squad and we just rolling with him just because it's the hot thing to do or following him because it's a lot of drama. Nah, man. We've been watching this team every game. When LeBron was here, when he wasn't here, before he ever got to the league, like, we are lifelong fans right now. So what y'all are getting is real, raw, uncut knowledge about the Cleveland Cavaliers that you're not going to find elsewhere, because I've been communicating with Mark and Vince all season long, and they have not held back on their opinions on this basketball team, a team that which I just about a week or two ago said to them was the least fun Cavs team I can ever remember rooting for. This team has been an abomination to watch. In spite of the fact that they're still the third seed in the East as we speak, they have been atrocious. And yet, they made all these moves on Thursday, right at the deadline, in the middle of the day. I was having a panic attack at my day job as the news was coming in. I couldn't believe it. You know what I'm saying? And I just want to get you guys' opinion on it. So question one, right out the gate, and I always plug the site and everything at the top of the show. So again, please like and subscribe to the podcast. We're on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Of course, we're on twitter.com/HHS Report, facebook.com/HHS Report. Mark is on Twitter at Remark1972. My man Vince doesn't do any social media, and that's all good because we got him covered anyways. But first things first, right out the gate, I mean, plain and simple. How do y'all feel about the trades? Obviously, the Cavaliers sent out 2 draft picks and 6 players, I believe. They sent out Dwayne Wade, Derrick Rose, Jay Crowder, Iman Shumpert, Channing Frye, and Isaiah Thomas, also known as Dead Weight. That's how I kind of view it. I mean, and then they brought back Larry Nance Jr., Rodney Hood, Jordan Clarkson, and George Hill. That's what they did. So I just wanted to get you guys' initial reaction. Vince, go ahead and lead us off, man. What did you think of the move that the Cavs made?
Immediately hearing of the trade, like me personally, I was a little frustrated and like it hit me off the blue, you know what I'm saying? So I wasn't prepared, you know what I'm saying? So in the beginning, I was a little frustrated, and even after it settled in, it was more funny to me. They're blowing it all up. They're like, you know, on a team like this, the finals 3 years in a row, that has heavy expectations. I mean, they tweak their roster during the middle of the season every year, but nothing like this. So I was thinking immediately, like, they're blowing off this year and, you know what I'm saying, plan for the future. But after I sat down and the dust settled, I kind of looked at the moves, and I'm pretty impressed with the moves. For the immediate future and for the future later on. Like, immediately right now, I was looking at the possibility of what could be with the players that they had. And after I looked at it, like, actually, the players that we had on the team didn't contribute much. It was the possibility of, can Isaiah Thomas be that 25 or 30 point scorer again? Can we use a veteran like D-Way? Can Crowder be the guy that he was in Boston? Could these guys do this to add that to this Cavs team? You know what I'm saying? When everybody was healthy and everybody was full of stress. But when you look at it, actually, on paper and looking at the game, we got rid of a lot of dead weight like that. I would say, besides the numbers, Wade was probably the best player that was lost out of there because he played with LeBron better. He was good with the second unit, but he was also averaging like 8 points or 10 points a game. So if you look at it realistically, they actually lost nothing or next to nothing. So after, you know, sitting back, I changed my mind about it.
So Vince said he liked the moves. You know, initially he was kind of like, man, what the hell are they doing? And it looked like they was maybe giving up, but now you sounds like you're coming around a little bit. Mark, how did you feel about him?
Well, I think Barkley said it best, that, you know, it was addition by subtraction because of the fact that the people that were gone from the team or that were traded from the team really didn't contribute much. The two people that, and V alluded to this earlier, the two people that probably really had any type of input on the team was Channing Frye and D Wade. But I think those two players in particular, you know, Frye only started playing recently. I mean, for whatever reason, Ty Lue can only play Channing Frye, you know, every now and then. He couldn't play him every day. I mean, a big man, a 7-foot big man who can spread the floor like that, couldn't find any time for him for some reason under Ty Lue. And then you throw in D-Way, who I was really impressed by him. I want to just give a shout-out to D-Way because I've been a big critic of D-Way his entire career, and I want to give him props just because he knew himself that his skills were diminishing and that he was no longer a starter. And for him, you know, basically a future Hall of Famer who looked at his own game and looked himself in the mirror and said, what's the best way for me to help this team? And he figured the best way to help this team was to go to the bench instead of starting. That was a big move for him, and not a lot of people, you know, that's a future Hall of Famer would admit to something like that. So I have to give him credit, and he's been nothing but a class act ever since he walked into the door. So those two players in particular that, you know, I had a little bit of an emotional attachment with. The funny thing about it is, I was with my son. We were doing a college visit. You know, it's that time of year, so we were doing a college visit at the time, all these trades started rolling in. So it was like, it was kind of crazy that, you know, we were walking in at the college and I was like, they made a deal. And we was looking at who did this and who did this. On paper, you know, it's kind of funny when you get to that point, you know, you have this type of relationship with your kid, you know, and I've been a fan of this trade since the minute it happened, because they needed something. I mean, we've been complaining about this team since day one. The lack of defense, the lack of athleticism.
The defense is just downright deplorable.
Right. Ridiculous. It's ridiculous for a professional basketball team to be that porous defensively. It's
bad. It's unprofessional.
Exactly. Exactly.
Highly unprofessional.
So, I mean, I liked all the moves. I liked all the players that they got back because it infused athleticism and infused youth in here. And just, you know, if nothing else, just the kids, because they don't know what they're dealing with yet. They're young. So from a basketball standpoint, they're ignorant, you know, when it comes to this time of year, when we get into the playoffs and things like that. And it can be a bad thing, but it also can be a good thing because, you know, you're getting somebody with just fresh eyes who just want to go out there and who want the opportunity just to make the playoffs or just to be on a winning team. You know, that to me, that's the biggest thing that they got out of this. So I'm happy with all of them coming here, every last one of them.
So I would tend to agree with both of you guys. I like the need. The need was there to shake things up. I mean, I think we can all agree with that.
Without question.
So yeah. It was nice to see them infuse some new blood into the situation and just breathe some life into a team that looked lifeless. That's kind of how the Cavs are playing, specifically LeBron James, who, for better or worse, the team has always followed his lead. As soon as he assumed a leadership role on the team back from between 2003 to 2010, and then when he returned in 2014, the team has always moved however he's moved. It was good for the Cavaliers to do something different, because what they had clearly wasn't working. The other piece here, in addition to the defense being deplorable and insulting to the fans, was the notion that they didn't need to change anything because of the locker room, which obviously they did. And that was the one thing I would say about Dwayne Wade, was that although he did do a lot of great things on the court, I agree with what Vince said. He did some masterful things with the second unit earlier in the year, especially during that win streak. He graciously moved to the bench and let J.R. Smith come back in early in the year. But there was some rumors that he was kind of maybe messing things up in the locker room. He kind of wasn't, you know, some people thought that he was kind of, I think they called it like lawyerdom, I think is the word that they were circulating, which I'm not entirely sure what that means, but I guess they maybe thought that he just kind of had too much to say about different things in general, which is, you know, that's probably nothing terribly wrong with that, because he's a veteran. That's what veterans are supposed to do. They're supposed to be vocal. But I think there's a line to it. And I think what was even more detrimental was his relationship with LeBron, because those two guys are so close that according to some, it drew a line of division with the rest of the team. So you kind of had IT and Jay Crowder together because they were clicked up from their Boston days. You had Bron and Wade clicked up, and then you had the rest of the guys just kind of floating out there, and there wasn't a lot of cohesion. You didn't remember the year that they won the title in 2016. LeBron was doing all these Instagram posts talking about family, and it was the whole squad together. Deli and Mozgov was in the picture, and all these IG posts and stuff like that about them being unified and all this. You don't see any of that now. You know, you didn't see any of that this year. So there definitely needed to be some kind of shakeup to help ease that pain. What the Cavaliers did, essentially, Kobe Altman, Dan Gilbert, they cut out all the cancers to the team, pretty much. I mean, Isaiah Thomas was coming. He just got to the team this year. He just started playing like 2 weeks ago, and he's lighting up the team to the media after every game. You know what I'm saying? Right. Which takes balls. You know what I mean? Like, I got to give him credit for that. That's a ballsy move. But, like, he's going after Kevin Love in team meetings. He's lighting up the coaching staff and the team after games. He's talking about what they used to do in Boston and how it's not how they do things here in Cleveland. And it just was not going well. Add to the fact that he wasn't getting along with LeBron on the court. Like, you
exactly.
know, he was toxic. The Dwayne Wade situation seemed to be getting worse. You got Shump doing a reality show with his wife on VH1 coming out in March.
Man, I mean, come on, man.
Like these are real problems. You got Derrick Rose going AWOL in the middle of the season, contemplating retirement, and then coming back and, you know, not sure what he wants to do. Like they paid him to come in and kind of keep steady the ship until Isaiah got back, and then he goes nuts and leaves. You know what I'm saying?
These
are real issues with all these guys. I agree. Channing Frye is going to be missed. And Wade is going to be missed for the reasons we already mentioned, but Channing Frye is the other key piece that he's going to be missed. You know, the cohesiveness that he created with the podcast with Richard Jefferson, and RJ's already gone, of course. He might have even been responsible for Lil Kev. Is that right?
I think he was a big part of that for Lil Kev.
The Lil Kev thing, which again kind of galvanized the group and brought the team together 2 years ago when they won the title. Like Channing, and when he got on the court, he played well. So Channing was a underrated piece of this team, and you know, we thank you for your service, right? But we're sad to see him go.
Right.
But on the other hand, I think there was a huge infusion of talent when you talk about guys like Rodney Hood coming in, who's the highest scorer of the group, I believe, of the four that came over. I think he's a massive upgrade over Jay Crowder. And to take you guys behind the curtain a little bit, Vince and I have been going back and forth all season about Jay Crowder versus J.R. Smith and who's been more detrimental to the team. Like, because they have both been horrendous all year, both of them, right? And here's the thing with the Cavs. They have they had a couple of black holes on this team, right? Guys that were giving them nothing, either because of injury or when they were on the court, they were ineffective. And there's four guys that stand out in that way, at least how I look at it. J.R. Smith, Tristan Thompson, Jay Crowder, and Isaiah Thomas. They were zeros offensively, they were zeros defensively, and they weren't helping the Cavs win at all. So you can, I guess, argue either way whether or not it was Crowder or Smith who was worse. They were both bad, and I think we can agree on that.
They were.
And Crowder's gone, but JR and Tristan are still here. So that brings me to my next question. Are you guys concerned that they made all these moves and JR and Tristan are still here? And let me just say one other thing. I have a theory about Tristan Thompson that he was dogging it deliberately because he was trying to force a trade to the Clippers so Chloe could get back to L.A. That was my theory. I thought Chloe wanted to go back to L.A. and wanted to raise their baby back in L.A. And I thought he wanted to go to the Clippers. He knew that he was going to get dealt for DeAndre, so he started stinking it up on purpose. I'll let y'all pontificate on that for a little bit. But what did y'all think of the fact that Tristan and JR are still on the squad, though?
Go ahead, Vinny. I was just going to say that Tristan Kardashian was trying to get himself traded. That was the whole thing behind all of it. I think also, you know, you got to look at it from a standpoint. You know, he was the league's Iron Man for years since he came into the league. And now all of a sudden now the last two seasons he's been getting hurt. He's been getting injured. And people take it a different way, you know what I'm saying? So for him, I think it was like a reality check for him. But I think he started looking at doing the Keeping Up with the Kardashians show. I've seen him. I mean, my daughter's watching for whatever reason. I don't know why, but I mean, he's been on that show more than he's been in a Cavaliers uniform this year. That to me it really bothered me seeing him on TV that much. So I could see him wanting to try to force a deal to go to the Clippers. JR, I guess to break the tie between you two, because I know you was hard on Crowder and V was hard on JR. I'm looking at JR only because he's been with the team longer, and it seemed like, and it's easier, and you could say all the other stuff that he had, you know, with his daughter, you know, and everything like that. I mean, I get that, but at the same time, he's been with that team for 3.5 years, and the bottom line with him is, it seems like once he got his money, because the easiest excuse could be, well, he got his money, so now he's dogging it. I think it was more so of the fact that they had to play him because they really didn't have anybody else. You know, D-Wade was there, but he wasn't going to take up any minutes, and nobody was there that was good enough to start over him. Now with with Clarkson and Hood, they got guys who can take some minutes from him. So he's going to have to step up. Tristan realizes now that he's not going anywhere, so he has no excuse but to step up. So
especially now.
I mean, everybody's hurt. You know, all the other big men are hurt on the team, and he's basically the last man standing. So he has, you know, he has no reason to dog it at this point. He has to play hard the rest of the season. So I think at this point, you know, I'm not as concerned as I would have been had they did nothing. Let's just put it that way.
What about you, Vince?
Well, me, with the Tristan trying to get traded thing, I don't know about that. It's a possibility. I mean, I never thought of it that way. But Tristan has never really been a good basketball player anyway. So people say he's thinking it up. Like, he stuck it up forever. That's just what Tristan does. But
hey, go back and watch the injury game six against the Warriors in 2016. Man. That was the best basketball he's ever played.
Yeah, but as you know what I'm saying, as we were saying, like the injury, like Mark was saying with the injury and the Iron Man thing, like I think that was his big problem because he's never been a very good basketball player. He's always been it with energy and hustle, and after you get injured, it's kind of hard to do some of those things on the court. You know what I'm saying? Or you're not as easy to do those things. You get kind of timid and wonder if your body's going to respond a certain way. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I'm blaming for Tristan being trash besides just being trash, you know what I'm saying? And as far as JR goes, we've had that argument with JR and Crowder. My biggest thing about JR was, you know, like Mark said, JR's been on the team. Like with Crowder, you know what I'm saying? Crowder didn't play well. He didn't live up to what he played like in Boston, but you know what I'm saying? He had got traded from a team we didn't think he was going to get traded from. His mother passed away on that same day that he got traded. He comes here and he finds out that Ty Lue can't coach. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of things this guy is going through when he gets on the roster. They already knew Ty Lue couldn't coach. They already know this stuff about the Cavs. He knows about the organization. His job, he knows his job. He knows his role. These other guys coming in are trying to find their role. That's why I said JR was the biggest bust, because once IQ was born all year and Derrick Rose went AWOL after 10 games, they had like 30 games between Derrick Rose leaving the IT playing, and our starting backcourt was averaging like 8 points a game. Like, you can say Jose Calderon, but nobody expected a lot out of Jose Calderon. And he's a new guy in the new system, playing on a new team. All these other guys had excuses. JR had no excuse. Yeah, he was injured last year. He had some things with his daughter, I understand. But this year, he had no excuse, and he played like straight garbage. And I think part of the problem was is the LeBron and Wade.
Yep.
Because, Jake, if you notice, all the years, JR was LeBron's guy. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? They're the same age. They came out about the same time. And out of say from high school. These guys know each other. They're around the same age. They bonded. Their family bonded. Every time you see IG post and all that, it was JR and his wife and Bron and his wife. When Wade comes, to just Wade and his wife. And Bron and his wife, like, they kick everybody to the side. I think emotionally, everybody says JR does well when things are going well. His relationship with his buddy is not the same because he got his best friend. He got a jelly full of peanut butter here. I think that was part of the problem with JR. But I'm a JR fan, and I always look for the best in JR because people have always been hard on JR. I think JR is a very good basketball player and plays his role when he has a role to play, but this year he's been garbage. But I don't like, I mean, now that they set up the team, I'm happy that those guys are still here because, I mean, it is part of the team. They are there helping. Tristan is that guy, that easy guy. And if everybody goes back to playing their role and doing what they need to do, then they can be a benefit along with the young guys. But it's also guys here to push them, like Mark said. Like, if they are, it's sent it up for another 2 weeks. He's going to be the backup shooting guard. And I think he knows that, and it's time to play basketball now. So I'm glad they're on the team.
So I will say that, in full disclosure, you know, you mentioned that Jay Crowder lost his mom right when the trade went down. Fortunately for me, I've never lost a parent, so I can't imagine trying to come back from that and then just go back to work and just everything is just going to be cool like that. Like, I know it's not that simple. Because I can't even imagine what that would be like. And in full disclosure, you know, you guys, both of you are brothers, and you guys have lost a parent. So it's probably something that you could more empathize with him on than I could.
It changes your life around, period, along with, you know what I'm saying, being traded and all that. That's just extra emphasis on life-changing things that happen at the same time. So I kind of gave him a pass on certain things.
There's a lot of emotion that's involved with that. So, I mean, some people handle handle situations like that and handle grief differently. Some people want to go back to work and just try to channel that and block all of that. But then some people, you know, it's, I mean, he lost his mom. So for him, you know, she was probably his best friend and things of that nature. So for him, you know, that's a part of him he's never going to have back. So it takes a longer time to try to cope and try to understand or how to deal with those type of emotions. And, you know, and also getting traded, like he said, that, you know, that's a lot of stress to put on him. So I'm a little less harder on him just because, and for the biggest part is the fact he just got there as opposed to JR, who's been there and allowed some high school BS to get in the way. Because, like you were talking about, Justin, the thing that the rumors that we started hearing was that D-Wade, not intentionally, but his relationship was with LeBron was hurting the team concept, like you was bringing with earlier. Because D-Wade was the only person that had LeBron's ear, and it caused an isolation from the rest of his team. And because of that, you know, there was no team bonding. I mean, LeBron at that point, he was so consumed with, you know, with just having his best friend there and dealing with the things, you know, with issues with his best friend, that the team suffered around him. And it got to the point where it got toxic. So, I mean, that's a big deal. That's a big deal that was going on with all of that stuff.
So my only thing with Crowder, though, was that in spite of all that, you know, he was brought here primarily as a defensive guy, and who could make
a three-pointer? And he didn't play any defense.
He didn't play no damn defense from the word go. So now maybe you could chalk that up to his personal situation. And
right.
Obviously Isaiah was still going through a tragic situation that happened not that long ago, and we'll talk about Isaiah in a little bit. But,
right.
You know, Crowder, to me, he never played a lick of defense. And the fact that his shots weren't falling, or that, you know, some people were saying that, Crowder was even saying himself that he never felt comfortable in the offense, and that he didn't know when his shots were coming or where they were coming from, and him and LeBron just didn't mesh. And there was also a little side rumor that I think D Rose had like knocked up Crowder's ex girlfriend or something like that. Like there was all kinds of craziness. Yeah, there was that thing that was out there. But I want to move on. But I just expected more from Crowder on the defensive end of the floor. The fact that he couldn't hit the jump shot was bad enough, but it got compounded by the fact that he could not stop anybody. And basically, he was a negative on both sides of the court, and he was just running up and down the court when he was kind of built to be even a better player than JR was. But and Vince touched on question three. Let me go to Vince first with this one. So question three.
Okay.
Are you guys concerned that Tyronn Lue is still the coach?
I've been concerned from day one he took over the team. From day one he took over the team, man. Like, come on. And getting back to the Jay Crowder thing with Ty Lue makes everybody bad defense.
That's true. That's true.
No one that's came to the Cavs that has a defensive pedigree has become better or at least as good as they were when they got here. Remember Imar Shumpert? Remember the defensive guy Imar Shumpert was? Imar Shumpert can't guard anybody either now. You want to know why? Because Ty Lue is the Cavs head coach. That's why. And Ty Lue's only argument, they give up 130 points, and he said, play with pace. You guys got to play with pace. No, you guys got to stop somebody. You're not supposed to win 140 to 138. If you have 140 points, you're supposed to win by 40 points, and your starters are supposed to be on the bench. Not LeBron have to make a three-pointer to save you or a jump shot to save you in overtime. Like, Ty Lue cannot coach basketball. People like – I like Ty Lue. I think Ty Lue's a nice guy. I think Ty Lue's a nice guy, but I think he runs in that long line of Mike Brown as head coach. He thinks as a head coach.
Is LeBron yes-man?
I don't care about that because great players have yes men, unless you have Popovich or Phil Jackson or one of these Hall of Fame coaches. Nobody that's going to be able to tell LeBron what to do. And LeBron at this stage is not going to play for Popovich because he's already set in his way. So any other coach in the NBA is not going to tell LeBron what to do. I don't mind that. Basketball means defense and offense. It means moving the ball. It means, you know what I'm saying, getting people in the best position to make their best play. Every once in a while, Ty Lue draws something out of the timeout that I say is good. But overall, Ty Lue makes no adjustment during the game. They don't practice like Isaiah Thomas said. A team that needs to practice doesn't practice. I don't care what you did in your championship run. This basketball team needs to practice. because they stink. And when you stink, you need to fix. You know, so you can't say, I won the spelling bee in 2016, so I don't practice spelling words because I won it in 2016. Well, you can't spell today, so you need to spell today. You need to practice today. The Cavs need to practice. Like, he's a horrible coach. He does nothing. Like I said, I like him as a guy. Kalu's a nice guy. He could be one of those guys that wins the Man of the Year award every year. You know what I'm saying? He's a nice guy. I like him personally. I like him. He's a nice guy. And it seems like the team likes him. You know what I'm saying? But as a coach, an X and O guy, he is horrible. He is a horrible coach. And no matter what the Cavs do, he's always going to worry me about winning a championship. And everybody's going to say, well, he won a championship in 2016. That was David Black's team and David Black's principal that won the championship.
Without question. That's what
David
Black stole my thunder
on that. The team was the 10th-ranked defensive team when David Black was the head coach. When they got to the playoffs, which was 2 months later, they had already dropped down to, like, 17. And ever since then, they've been in the 20s. Now they're, like, the worst in the top third, worst in the league.
Yeah, they're hanging out with Sacramento on the defensive tip.
Hanging out with Sacramento on the defensive side. And Ty Lue's offensive strategy is play with pace for everybody spread to the corners and maybe somebody running to a pick and roll with 7 seconds left. And when LeBron kicks to a guy, you got to shoot because it's less than 3 seconds on the shot clock. Like, they don't run any real plays
offense,
like, consistently. Nobody motions. Nobody cuts to the basket. Nobody passes the extra pass. The Cavs always get good three-pointers. They never get great three-pointers because they don't make the extra pass. That's open. And I think he's going to be a liability down the stretch. Even if these guys come in and sit and the Cavs' energy gets better and they play better, if you get to a game where teams match up well with the Cavs and it's going to take coaching to win, I don't think the Cavs can do it.
Mark, do you have anything to add to that, or do you echo everything that Vince just said when he just ethered to Ron Lue just now?
Only thing I would just want to mention is I've never liked Ty Lue since the 2001 NBA Finals when he was supposed to be the AI stopper and he got crossed over. So I've never liked Ty Lue from the beginning. And the fact that they hired him.
He was solid at Nebraska, though. He was solid.
They hired him and made him the highest paid assistant coach. To me, that was undermining David Black from the beginning, man.
Yeah,
he was an assistant
head coach. I think that was his title, was assistant head coach, wasn't
it? Yeah, assistant head coach. Who pays that guy that type of money, man? I mean, he's like, okay, he was his first choice. They didn't select him, but you can be the top assistant. And, I mean, all David Black was doing was looking over his shoulder because he knew that Ty Lue had the locker room. He had the ear of LeBron. He had the ear of everybody else in that locker room because he played. David Black didn't. So it was easy for LeBron to galvanize locker room against David Black and say, oh, yeah, Ty Lue understands us. So he gets us because he's played the game. And Ty Lue is just basically a friend, man. He's not a disciplinarian. He's not – I mean, the issue that you said with Crowder not being able to get adjusted to the offense, that's on Ty Lue, man. That's bottom line, that's on Ty Lue and LeBron as the leader of the team. They need – it's their responsibility to get those guys involved. Jay Crowder can't create his own shot. It has to be predicated on the offense that's given to them. And LeBron, who is the most – ball dominant person out there, he has to incorporate them. He has to get them his shots where he's comfortable. They didn't do that. Now, I mean, you can look at who's to blame more between Lue or LeBron, but I'm gonna go to Ty Lue.
Okay,
because
so you
he's
got you
coach.
Guys. You guys are jumping the gun, so I'm gonna come back to that. Mark, let me ask you this then. Given that LeBron is the onus is on him to basically on the floor anyways incorporate all these guys, how concerned are you then about them having to do it all over again once Kevin Love comes in?
I'm concerned a little bit, but here's the only caveat to that, because he's dealing with the younger team. On average, a team that's almost 5 years younger, you know, going from 32, average age of 32 to now 27. So yeah, it's going to be a learning curve, but. In fairness to LeBron, when he first came back to the team, he had a young squad also. So he was able to incorporate them. Now, he did it with, you know, a lot more time than this. So that's my only concern. But the bottom line with this team is that they are talented. And you have a more engaged LeBron now as opposed to what he was even like 3 weeks ago. You could tell there was a disconnect. He was coming out there lackadaisical on both ends of the floor. It was all Aaron, and it comes back to what Ty Lue said about everybody having agendas. Everybody on that team had a different agenda, and nobody had the same. Nobody had the same goal. Everybody was man, every man for them, him or her, I mean, himself, and it was nothing about team. It was not about winning. It was about none of that stuff. So at least now there's a galvanizing point to, okay, we got to make this work because we're in the second half of the season. We don't have a lot of time. And we got to get these guys up to speed before we start making a run in April. That's, you know, so at the end of the day, you know, you get a more dedicated LeBron and a more focused LeBron, that's going to help out a lot.
So you think a focused LeBron can help bring Love in and things will smooth out quicker than...
Yeah, I would think so, just because, you know, once again, Love has been there. He's been through the war. So it's not about him trying to fit at this point. He's going to be more, it's going to be more about him because Love knows his role. It's more about the other guys adjusting to Love when he gets back. But I don't think Love is going to be the problem. It's going to be the new guys getting adjusted to him. But that's just going to take time. And you probably won't see it fully developed this year. If everybody came back next year, then you'll probably see that happen, you know, be more cohesive. But, you know, time is of the essence. And practice time in particular is going to be very key for this team.
So, Vince, let me come to you with this one then. So, and I want both of you guys' take on this. So, and you kind of already got into it a little bit, but for all the issues that the Cavs have had recently, who's most to blame then? Is it Kobe Altman? Is it Dan Gilbert? Is it Tyronn Lue? Or is it LeBron James?
Well, the team comes and goes as LeBron goes. But, right. You know what I'm saying? Like, they just do. Like, the on-the-court stuff, like, I would say kind of LeBron and Tyronn Lue, because LeBron knows that he has to get everybody involved because he dominates the ball. And if you know you got a guy like Isaiah Thomas or something like that that has dominated, you have to get them the ball sometimes. You know what I'm saying? You have to play a different position. Like, if you want somebody like that to catch their rhythm and they're a ball dominant guy, you got to get the ball. LeBron can score off the ball. He can score on the ball. He can score with his back to the basket. He can score from long range. A lot of people can't do that. So LeBron don't have to find this game like most people. You know what I'm saying? So I do kind of blame him for not getting people their ball in the sweet spot. But I also blame Tyronn Lue because that's his offense. Like, everybody is – get LeBron the ball, everybody go to the wing to catch the ball and shoot a three-pointer. Like, that's it. That's all. We're going to keep tripping in the middle. We're going to keep three guys on the arc. We're going to get a ball in LeBron's hands. And if we don't get fast break point, when we run our offense, LeBron is going one-on-one. He's going to dribble the ball till he calls for the pick with like 8 seconds left. Tristan or whoever the big man is going to come out and set the pick. LeBron is going to roll. If he can get to the basket, that's fine. He'll get to the basket. If he can't get to the basket or if the roll man helps him, then he can alley-oop Tristan. If not, he kicks to the corner and these guys got 3 or 4 seconds to shoot the ball. Like, that's your offensive strategy. Like, sure, yeah, LeBron could do more, but this is what Ty Lue sets up. And if you don't believe me, just watch him every play. Just watch it. That's what it is. So it gets to a point where everybody knows what's going on in the defense. So they close out better. And now that they only got 3 or 4 seconds to shoot the basketball, you know what I'm saying? You can't make that extra pass to get it to a wide open guy. So, I mean, it's a little bit of everybody. I don't think, to me, like, Kobe Altman has done a great job. Everybody's going to say, Boston won the trade, but you had to trade Kyrie. You can't have a guy on a championship team that doesn't want to be there because you don't have a championship team. I love Kyrie, but you have to let him go. You can't have disgruntled workers that don't want you to be successful. You know what I'm saying? Like, he does not want to be there, so he's not going to give his all. So you had to do it. And at the time, hindsight is 20/20. Like I always say, a bad shot is a bad shot, whether it goes in or not. So a good trade, everybody was like, oh, but they got back from Kyrie was great. Now that it didn't work out, it was a horrible trade. You can't say that. You can't say that. You know what I'm saying? Everybody thought it was great when it started. So now, just because it didn't work out and the fit wasn't right, don't say it was a horrible trade. Kobe Altman did his job.
So you think
an all-star, a 29-point score a game, a guy that was shooting 40% and averaging 14 points, the pick man and the Brooklyn pick for a guy that didn't want to be here. That was a great trade. And now look what he pulled off now. You can't blame Kobe Altman. And although everybody wants to blame Dan Gilbert because they told him all the letter for 2010, Dan Gilbert has done nothing but pay luxury tax on his team, getting the pieces that they need. So it has to come back down to LeBron and Ty Lue. And me, personally, LeBron also does something to help the team, so I won't put it all on LeBron. Ty Lue is number one because he does nothing for the team, in my opinion.
Way to end that soliloquy with a punch, man. Again, just reiterating the fact that Tyronn Lue does nothing. So, Mark, where do you shake out on that, man? I mean, Vince had a lot to say there. I don't know if you think it's one person is mostly responsible. I know a lot of people will tell you that this alleged power struggle between Dan Gilbert and LeBron is what's driving a wedge between the team, and you know that, and then people put that on him and the ego thing and all that. Do you think one is more responsible than the other? Is it Ty Lue? Is it Kobe? Is it somebody else?
Yeah, I'm gonna say 48% LeBron, 48% Ty Lue, and 2% Kobe Altman. And the only reason why I'm saying 2% for Kobe Altman because I'm one of the few people that didn't like the deal from the jump, and mainly because you getting, and not because of the players that they got back. Because I liked Isaiah when he was coming here. I did have questions from, you know, a defensive standpoint. I just didn't know how shitty of a defender he actually was. I think that was the biggest thing to me, the biggest surprise. And Brad Stevens gets a lot of props for hiding him like he did. But Jay Crowder, I was a good fan, a big fan of. Zizzy, I could care, you know, he was a throw-in. The Brooklyn pick was huge. But to me, the problem was that somebody allowed this loud Kyrie voice or displeasure with the team to come out. So he, and like V said, he was forced to trade him. I guess under the circumstances, that was the best thing that he could have received. But I was never a big fan of that particular deal because I just thought that, you know, for somebody who to me is a top 10 player in the NBA, and or in my opinion, probably even closer to 5 than 10, you know, you just need to get a bigger haul. But I think, you know, you got what you could out of that. 48% for LeBron because LeBron, you know, at the end of the day, the team follows LeBron. So I mean, he has to take some of the blame. If we're going to give him credit when they play or they do well, you're going to have to blame him when they're not doing well. And Ty Lue, I mean, I can't echo what V said anymore. I mean, the dude can't coach. So, I mean, a lot of the crap that's going on with players not fitting in and all that stuff, that falls on Ty Lue, man. He just sucks as a head coach. So, I mean, he, for the most part, offers nothing. Like V said, he doesn't do anything for him. So he gets a good portion of blame. But LeBron can't be blameless. But the front office between Dan Gilbert and Kobe Altman, you know, having to be forced to go ahead and take a deal like that and trade a top 10 player like that. And basically at this point, you know, get back a guy who basically was damaged goods and you knew you wasn't going to have him until January anyway. And just the fact that you had to force feed him. I think the myth was that they had a deep enough team to weather the storm until Isaiah got back. Mm-hmm. Then you had Derrick Rose going out there acting a fool, realizing if he didn't want to play anymore or not. And then all this other drama that was going on circulating through the team. You know, you had a whole bunch of big names, but none of these pieces fit. And I think that so part of that 2% has to go towards the front office on that.
So I'm kind of with y'all on a lot of that. And you guys kind of answered one of my other questions at the same time, was whether or not the Cavs won or lost the Kyrie trade. And I'm kind of, I know, Mark, you said you didn't really care for it at the jump, but I'm with you on the fact that, number one, Kyrie's a top 10 player, which I said last year. Even before last year, I think I even said that. But certainly,
I think we all did.
Year.
I think well, it just comes back to the fact that ESPN though. Allowed that to happen. ESPN and the rest of the outside media allowed that to fester in Kyrie's head to think that he was worse than John Wall and all these other point guards.
Yeah, I mean, people are talking Dame Lillard. Some people were even saying Isaiah was better. You know what I'm saying? I heard a lot of people taking shots at Kyrie. I think Kyrie's better than Stephen Curry. You know what I mean? But I agree.
But
Kyrie, without question.
But Kyrie was getting a lot of heat from people, and people kept throwing out the, well, Kyrie can't even lead his own team without LeBron. Every time LeBron sat down, you know, da-da-da. And I tell people, like, Kyrie is playing with a team that's constructed entirely for LeBron. When LeBron ain't in there, it's not the same. It's not just as easy to say Kyrie go win games. So Kyrie's balling now, and I expect an apology letter from everybody that was trying to talk shit to me when I was saying Kyrie was a G. Number one, number two, I think you guys are going a little easy on LeBron James, okay? Because I feel like he, above anybody else, is responsible for these messes. What we've seen from LeBron is people are speculating that he's going to leave this year, which we'll get to that. But, you know, he left Miami in 2014. He left Cleveland in 2010. And in each instance, it was the same thing. You had a team that was capped out financially, that mm-hmm. had the oldest roster in the league, and mm-hmm. therefore it was and had no future assets. And when you combine all those things together, the team was essentially inflexible, and it was almost impossible to improve the roster. So LeBron left, and he left the 2010 Cavs in the lurch because we had all these old ball players on expensive contracts that didn't fit without him. And then everybody roasted the Cavs for not having any kind of contingency plan back then, which is why I can't understand how people are sitting up here today and criticizing the Cavs for not wanting to deal the Brooklyn pick when LeBron won't commit to them now. And that's the biggest issue, is that LeBron's refusal to commit is a problem. It was a problem.
It's a huge problem, but that's why I didn't want him back when we had this conversation before in 2010 when he came back. That I didn't want him because of that same thing you just mentioned, because he causes a lot of that stuff himself. He's so hungry about trying to win titles.
Everywhere he goes.
And it's all about it. And to hell with the team, to hell with everybody else. You have to go and appease to him or kneel to him and give him all these high-priced players and stuff like that. And he leaves. That's, like you said, it's predicated on him. He leaves, and then all of a sudden, everything goes to shit. Now, all of a sudden, they're looking at him like, okay, why didn't y'all prepare for him leaving and all this stuff? You knew he was going
to
leave.
Right, and it's like, what are they supposed to prepare to win a title and build for the future at the same time? It doesn't make any sense. And Miami never got criticized for it. But for some reason, the Cavs keep getting criticized for it. And so...
No, very true.
And as a matter of fact, I'm going to take it a step further. I don't think the Cavs front office gets enough credit. I wrote a column about a year and a half ago about how David Griffin was the best GM in basketball, and he wasn't getting any credit for it. And now you see the job that Kobe Altman and Dan Gilbert, for whatever role Dan Gilbert has done under really stressful circumstances. I agree with both of you. You had to trade Kyrie, unfortunately, and I put that on LeBron too, that LeBron should have been there to kind of work it out some kind of way. But you can't have somebody like that on the team that doesn't want to be there. And Kyrie was allegedly threatening to sit out games with a knee surgery. You know what I'm saying? That's how much he didn't want to be there. So you had to move him. That's a cancerous, toxic situation. Him and LeBron.
Yeah, you think it was toxic now. Yeah, just imagine if he had he stayed.
Exactly. So they had to do something. Like in an ideal world, they would have all sat down, had a little powwow, you know what I'm saying? Drank some apple cider or something and worked it out. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. Played some Pictionary. They would have did something. Connect Four, whatever game it is there that they tickles their fancy. They would have did something to kind of form a bond, and it would have got over their differences. But it didn't happen, right? And so once the situation was reached the point of no return, they had to trade Kyrie, and they got a pretty decent package in return for him. And I think it's real easy to sit here now and say it was a bad deal because they moved off of Isaiah, and Isaiah caused all kinds of problems and wasn't healthy and all this other stuff.
It all comes down to that Brooklyn pick, though.
Exactly. What if that pick is number two?
Franchise-building player,
right,
then it makes that trade a lot easier to deal.
If that's Michael Porter, we're not having the same conversation. You know what I'm saying? If that's Marvin Bagley, you know what I'm saying? We're not saying having the same conversation. And I wanted to get to this point, too, about LeBron and versus the front office. And so people are obviously speculating that the front office has not done right by LeBron, and therefore LeBron is going to leave the team again. And everybody is acting as though it's a foregone conclusion that he's up out of here this summer, which I do not buy into. But I also want to look at it from the standpoint that I don't think the Cavs, again, are getting enough credit for what they've done for LeBron. Well, what have they done for LeBron, Justin? I'm going to tell you what they've done. And you guys can add to this list if you have something. You guys can add to this list. But these are just things from 2014 on to today. Just in these 3.5 years, this is what we have so far. They made LeBron the highest paid player in the history of the NBA at that time for a 1 year payday. So that was like $33 million or whatever. He was the highest paid. They paid him over $105 million total in these three. I should say by the end of this season they will have paid him $105 million. He didn't like Deion Waiters. They shipped his ass out of town. They overpaid J.R. Smith. They overpaid Tristan Thompson. They overpaid Iman Shumpert because LeBron got along with all those guys. And specifically, J.R. and Tristan were represented by his boy, Rich Paul, and Clutch Sports. Yeah. And that's, you know, clearly is a conflict of interest, but it went down anyways. Everybody looked the other way on it. So they got overpaid, which put more money in his boy, Rich Paul's pocket, and it legitimized him as an NBA agent so that he could go out and sign guys like John Wall, right? So that's a huge favor to them. So they did that. Yeah, they established Rich Paul. They gave special treatment to LRMR and those guys. At least I have it on good authority. You know, LeBron has his guys. They travel with the team on the plane and all this other stuff. And Kyrie and other guys weren't getting that treatment, right? So there's that. They drafted Andrew Wiggins and immediately traded his ass out of town for Kevin Love because LeBron wanted veterans to play with because veterans win and rookies don't, right? So they traded Andrew Wiggins. So that's and they mortgaged all the future assets. That's why the Cavs don't have any draft picks now. Do you know the Cavs haven't made a draft pick since 2015? Seriously, they haven't drafted a player since 2015. And so now they're going to have – now they traded for Kay Felder, but they didn't draft him. So so now they're – this year, now they finally have a pick, and you can understand why they want to hang on to that, right? So they've mortgaged all their future. They don't even have many picks beyond this year. That's the other thing. They fired David Blatt when he was in first place in the middle of the season. That was a favorite to LeBron. They hired his boy, Tyronn Lue. That was a favorite to LeBron. They signed Dwayne Wade, who was washed up, essentially. That was a favorite to LeBron, and maybe washed up's a little harsh, but, you know, Wade ain't what he was, and they would not have signed him if LeBron wasn't on the team, but they signed him because that's his boy. They traded away Isaiah Thomas because LeBron didn't like him, didn't get along with him. They made all these deals at the deadline, at the gun on Thursday. They attempted to acquire Eric Bledsoe, who was also LeBron's boy, represented by Rich Paul. They attempted to acquire him and Paul George, and we know LeBron wanted Paul George on his team, and it didn't fail through, but they tried to do it. And then they traded away Kyrie when Kyrie said he wanted out, and they knew that they didn't want him and LeBron together no more. It's a laundry list of things that the Cavs front office has done and done well on LeBron James's behalf, and they don't get any credit for any of this stuff. You know what I'm saying?
No,
so when people talk about, well, why would he stay in Cleveland? This is why he would stay in Cleveland, because they're bending over backwards for this dude. And I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it.
And they did do it in Miami, which is why he left in the first place.
Exactly. And so he absolutely deserves it. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, I mean, this is what we're talking about here. And the last thing I'll say is this. When you compare, when everybody wants to talk about, is LeBron leaving or not? Is he staying? Keep in mind that in his 15-year career, LeBron has signed 6 contracts. 5 of them were with the Cleveland Cavaliers by his own volition. One of them was with the rest of the league. So any other 29 teams, they have a combined 1 LeBron contract. And all the other teams, he signed with the Cavs 5 times. 5 times by his choice. He could have forced his way out when he was a rookie if he wanted to, like Steve Francis did. No, he signed with the Cavs because he wanted to be here. So make all the L.A. rumors you want, like he want to go play with LeVar Ball's kid or some shit. I don't think he wants to do that, but whatever. Let me ask y'all this, then. Let me just roll right into that. Do y'all think he's going after this year, or does it all depend on what happens in the next few months?
Me, personally, I don't know. But, like, this is the thing. Like, I'm a Cavs fan. So, like, everybody was like, I'm seeing LeBron when he went to Miami. I'm not seeing LeBron when he went to Miami. I didn't care for LeBron. I wasn't burning no jerseys, but who cares about LeBron after he leaves season? I'm a Cleveland sports fan, so I was rooting for the 1962 Kyrie-led Cavaliers. Now I'm up to a point where everybody wants the best player to stay. LeBron's the best player in the world. You keep saying KD and they can keep moving people up the list. LeBron is the best player in the NBA, period, point blank. So you always want him on your team. But now he leaves. Like, before I'm like, I didn't think he was going to leave, and I didn't want him to leave. Like, now I don't want him to leave, but I'm indifferent now. We got a title, but my thing, everybody thinks this trade is for right now. For me personally, I think Dan Gilbert says, if you want to walk, walk. I think that's what this trade meant to Dan Gilbert. I think when it all folded down, I think Dan Gilbert said, hey, we got this Brooklyn pick that hopefully we get a superstar to rearrange our franchise. We got 3 25-year-olds that we just picked up. And George Hill is 31, but he got 3 years left on his contract. It's a crazy contract, a lot of money, but he got guys not what it's like. You got rid of Isaiah Thomas, who's going to be a free agent this year. You got rid of these guys who's going to be free agents, D. Wade, D. Rose. They got 1 year contracts. You got guys in here, Rodney Hood got it next year and the possibility or whatever if you respect the free agent after that. Then you got Larry Nance, who has positives, like he was born in Akron. He's from here. Your father's jersey hangs in the rock. Like, he wants to be here. You got a small guy, small town Mississippi guy like Rodney Hood, who went to Utah and coming to Cleveland. Cleveland is like going to Miami or Las Vegas from Utah. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got that guy. You got Clarkson under contract. You got George Hill under contract for like 4 years or 3 years if possible. And Clarkson, he got guys, but if LeBron leaves, you still got these young guys here, along with Kevin Love still here, and you got Tristan's contract, Love's contract, but you still got a team together. You're not going to turn the – you're not going to have Joe Smith and Shaq and these guys.
And Antoine Jameson.
Here.
And Anthony
Parker. Antoine Jameson, yeah.
These guys that when LeBron left the first time. You got a
Delonte
young guy,
West.
Young guys that might want to be here, confused with a high pick. And I think that everybody's thinking that's now. And it could, like you said, it's a good PR move for Daniel. It's twofold because the LeBron leaves, say, I tried everything. I sick the whole roster up at the trade deadline. You know what I'm saying? But he can also say, if he does leave, I got this young talent. And to me, this is the smartest move Daniel would do besides trading everything. Like, I know people was like, he should just trade everything and go for it now at this year. I'm like, he's been through that before. Like, do you want to, you know what I'm saying, do you want to get trade the Brooklyn pick and get a guy like DeAndre or get these guys? These guys are not staying if LeBron doesn't stay. You got these young guys that may stay if LeBron leaves. And you, not only if they may stay, you got them under contract for 2 years. They might end up like the culture, like the city, doing whatever. You got bargain chips now. And I think that's what he did it for. He, Dan Gilbert is, everybody's like, oh, I had a friend of mine talk about the way LeBron burned Dan Gilbert burned LeBron. Dan Gilbert didn't burn LeBron in 2010. LeBron burned Dan Gilbert in the Cavs organization. Now you might not like the way Dan Gilbert handled it with the letter, but how can you talk about somebody, how they handle a relationship? Because it was a relationship, whether it's business or personal. I can't tell you how to handle a relationship if you break up with somebody or a relationship breakdown. I can't say. Some people slash tires. Some people go brick through windows. I'm not that type of person, so I don't understand it. But how can I judge you for doing that? He handled it in a way that he felt he got duped, he got treated a certain way, and he got mad and he put it out on in a letter. So people are still holding that against him. But he's done everything to make LeBron happy since, and everything before that he did was to make LeBron happy. And this time I think he said, I'm going to make my team and my organization work regardless if he's here or not. And that's the why he made the trade. And I think if LeBron leaves, he's going to be all right with it. He's not going to be happy, and I'm going to be all right with it. I'm not going to be happy, but I'm not sure LeBron leaves, and I never was.
I'm not either.
Sure that it, I was never of the fact that he was going to L.A.
Me neither.
Like, to me, that makes absolutely no sense.
None. Everybody just assuming that Paul George is going to go out there and meet him up. It's like, maybe Paul George doesn't want to go. Like, you're making a lot of assumptions. When you say
a lot
like
of assumptions.
Yeah.
At first it was Paul George and Russell Westbrook, and then Russell Westbrook, and then it was just Paul George. But, like, honestly, like, LeBron, Paul George, and
Lonzo
Ball, and Brandon Ingram, and them, you think they're going to beat the Lakers? I mean, beat the Warriors?
Hell no.
Do you think they're going to beat San Antonio? Do you think they're going to beat the Rockets? Do you think
no.
they're going to even beat OKC? Like,
Minnesota. We can go
Minnesota. These teams, like, to me, if you had a good argument of a LeBron going somewhere in the East, that might be the best argument. The only argument I can see is him going to the West would be to Houston, but they would have to mortgage almost everything.
I was going
to
say, I was going
to
have Mark
they would
chime
have
in.
To change the team that they are now.
Yeah, which is a very good one. But
yeah, very good.
So Mark, do you see LeBron leaving right now, or do you think it's too early to tell, or is he staying? Hey,
I honestly don't know if he's going. You know what? I really don't give a damn whether he stay or go at this point. I really don't, cause I mean we go through this drama all the time with this dude, man. And V spoke about this before. 2010, Dan Gilbert was caught with his pants down because he thought at some point in time that he did everything he could at the time to keep this dude, and he went ahead and just pretty much gave him a middle finger on national TV and went down to Miami. Well,
some people would say that they should have dealt for Stoudemire, but I mean, like,
I mean,
but,
I don't think it would. Then we would have had on, a, we would have had another damaged goods person, because you know, if they talk about Stoudemire and everything, but he ended up hurting himself, and he was never the same type of dude anyway.
And
so
depending on who you ask,
you know,
some people say Phoenix back
then. Depending on who you ask, right?
Yeah.
My thing is with now, just like V said, these moves was Dan Gilbert finally saying, you know what? Do what you want to do. I'm going to do what's best for my franchise. Last time I did, I tried to do what was best for you, and it ended up hurting me and my franchise. The value of my team dropped tremendously, and it still will if LeBron leaves, which I honestly don't think he's going to go anywhere. Because now he has a reason to stay. I think if they had kept the team the way it was, I don't think he would have any reason to stay. He would have left.
I think the likelihood that he returns to the Cavs is greater than any other individual team.
I agree with that.
Let me ask you.
I agree with that. But now they're prepared for the future, which they weren't prepared before.
Right.
And I think if he goes, whether he stays or goes, you now have, like V said, you have three 25-year-olds, and you have Ceddie Osman, who, and a Brooklyn pick, which you can actually start your rebuild, and you won't see 26-game losing streaks like you did the first year after LeBron left.
Is LeBron's leadership been fairly criticized? Because I've been very critical of his leadership, I think, off the floor. I think he's made a lot of missteps, and it's come back to cost the team, not the least of which, in fact, the greatest of which, is his unwillingness to commit long-term, which is a right that he has fully, but it hampers the team in a myriad of ways. And I think that's the root of a lot of problems, including the Kyrie relationship disintegrating. So, Vince, do you think his leadership is fairly judged by people?
No, I don't think not on the outside. I mean, we talk constantly, and I think we all fairly criticize him for the fact. And like you said, I agree. The thing about committing is the biggest thing. Like, I argued with a dude the other day, like, trying to tell me, what did Dan Gilbert do the first time LeBron was here? I'm like, he did everything that LeBron asked for, but LeBron wouldn't commit, so he could only get certain free agents.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, dude, the best guys are not coming here. LeBron is not coming here. I'm born and raised in Cleveland. I love my city, but it's not a destination.
Right.
Nobody wants to come here. They want to come here to play with the best player. That's what they want to do. They want to come here to win championships. That's what they want to do. The best player is not here, and without a chance to win a championship, they're never going to come here. So you have to put that on LeBron, because LeBron is enough. I mean, we had guys. I had interviews with guys like Trevor Ariza. He's not a big name guy, but Trevor Ariza said in 2010 he was calling LeBron, like, because the Cavs wanted him there. A long guy at the end that gets a 3-point shot, whatever. He was calling LeBron. LeBron wouldn't return the call. He said, I would have signed with me if I knew LeBron was going to stay.
Right.
But since he didn't get back to me, I wasn't going to sign with him. Why would I? You know what I'm saying? And so LeBron is trying to have his cake and eat it too. He's trying to say, okay, I understand as a businessman, you always want to control your destiny. That's fine. I don't have any problem. But then after you do that, don't say the organization didn't do what they did for you, or you couldn't get the player that you wanted. Don't say that, because you're the cause of that.
I agree.
Without committing. And that's why, look at OKC. Russell Westbrook said, I'm going to commit. They went out and traded for Paul George and Melo because they're trying to win. They showing him, hey, look, this is what I want to do. They got Melo, who everybody was – the Knicks were trying to get anybody to take that contract, and nobody would. You know what I'm saying? They got Paul George on a short lease, and Paul George could leave by the end of this year. But they said, look, Russ, you read up. We're going to try to glimpse for you right now. And if LeBron read up, the Cavs would have Paul George. Because they would have been willing to give anybody up for him.
Yeah, that's actually a great point.
So LeBron's leadership should be in question. We question it all the time, but everybody from the outside looks at all the rosiness. So LeBron is a rosy guy. Like, he's been to 7 NBA finals. He brings greatness to nothing. Miami has never been the same without him. They will never be the same without him. It was never the same before he got there. Cleveland, like, he's a generational guy. He's that guy. But he also deserves the blame in situations like that, and people don't want to give it to him because he's great. You can be great, and you can admire somebody, and you can have respect for somebody that also criticizes. And I think LeBron, everybody, you know my thoughts about LeBron in the history of basketball, but he deserves a lot of criticism. I don't think the national media or people on the outside get them to criticize him as much. They criticize him for dumb stuff that they did criticize him for, and not criticize him for the stuff that really matters.
That's a great way to put it, too. Man, you said a lot right there. I did want to point out, too, earlier, I know I said I wanted to get to Isaiah, and my thing is, the only thing I really want to say about him is I really feel for that dude, because I think that he's had a rough 9 months, 9 to 12 months. I mean, like, can you imagine being Isaiah? Like, you're 5'8", you've been counted out your whole career, and you finally found a home for you. The city loves you. You love the city. You ball, and you lead them to the number one seed in the East, and everything is all rosy, but then you injure your hip, right? And then he has a personal tragedy where he lost his sister, right? And then he re-injures the hip. Then he gets traded from the team that he loved. You know what I'm saying? And the city that he loved. And then he goes to this new situation. He's like, well, I get to play with LeBron. I'm about to go back to the finals anyway. So now, how you like me now, right? Nah, it doesn't work out. You know, he's still not 100%. He's playing terribly. He gets traded again. Fortunately for him, he didn't get traded to Siberia like Shumpert and Crowder did. But he got traded again. and he's never going to get that $100 million contract he wanted. So, you know, even though he played a huge role in why he got traded, of course. I do kind of feel sorry. Yeah. So I wanted to toss that out there. But I think I'll lead us at the final question of the evening, and I'll get both of your takes on it quickly. Mark, with all these moves, are the Cavs a contender for a championship? I mean, I think they were always, even with the problems, they were a contender for the East. Can they win an NBA championship with this roster?
It's got to be if Kevin Love comes back healthy. If these guys come in and mesh. If Ty Lue all of a sudden reads the Greg Popovich coaching book and learns how to coach. I mean, there's a lot of ifs in there. I'm not going to count them out because they have the best player. I'm never going to count them out because they have the best player. Will they get through the East? Absolutely, I think they'll get through the East. Will they win a title? It all depends on how the next 2 months go. If these guys come in and they mesh and they become – significantly better defensively, because it's not about scoring. They was trying to outscore people. They weren't trying to stop anybody. In order to beat Houston and Golden State, you have to be better defensively. You can't trade shots with these guys. You have to be better defensively
especially without Kyrie.
What's that?
Especially you especially can't trade shots with him now without Kyrie.
Exactly. You can't do that. So you have to be better defensive. You have to match their athleticism, and you have to match the intensity. You have to do better defensively. We can see it with our eyes. If they actually show that they can be better defensively, they have a shot. I think they're better still than any team in the East. Even before the deals, they still on paper were better than any team. These just wasn't playing like it. They get out the East. They play better as a defensive unit. They have a shot.
Vince, what about you? What you think?
I would agree with everything Mark said. Like, even in the depth of them being trash before the trade, I said that they would come out the East because I just don't see anybody in the East beating LeBron 4 out of 7 games. He's still the best player in the world. And it depends on the way these guys come in and how they mesh and how Kevin Love comes back healthy and how they mesh. Look at the team in 2015, the first finals or whatever that they played against the Warriors, without Kyrie and without Love, they put 2 games against that Warriors team. That's just LeBron being LeBron. So they have to get better defensively, though, because you can't win in the NBA, period. You can't even come out the East without playing East. I don't care how time it's for. But with LeBron on the team, you are a threat to win the championship every year. I mean, nobody thought we were going to beat the 73-9 Golden State Warriors either, but with LeBron, and you also had Kyrie, but with LeBron on the team, LeBron makes a difference. And with these young guys, hopefully they want to play hard for them, because a lot of these young guys look up to them, and hopefully they want to play hard for their team, because they're in an organization that's used to championships, and none of these guys have been in that. So I give them a good shot to come out of the East, but they just not to beat anybody 4 out of 7 games. We just have to see what the team looks like. But with LeBron on the basketball team, it's hard to count them out.
So I will go against anybody in the basketball nerd community who follows these analytics sites that'll tell you that the Raptors and the Wizards have a better statistical chance of winning a championship than the Cavaliers. That is bullshit, all right? So any team with LeBron James on it has a chance to win an NBA championship. I agree with you. Now, I think this team is still flawed. There's no big man there that can really protect the rim. The defensive issue, we'll have to see how the new guys help to that end, to that cause. we don't know yet what that's going to look like. If they didn't improve defensively, they ain't winning nothing. And then they're still missing that firepower, that extra punch that Kyrie had. I don't know if they replaced that, even though I like Hood and Clarkson can get a bucket. But I think the pieces that they added were good pieces. They should be better defensively. Rodney Hood can shoot. I mean, George Hill can shoot.
He provides length too, by the way.
I think the pieces are there, but it's gonna take a lot more. I think they may need a little bit of help, honestly. You know, they may need an injury out west. And I think Houston is talented enough to beat Golden State too. So I think the Cavs are going to be in the mix, but you can't count out the King. Well, I appreciate you guys both joining us. Vince Hicks, Mark Hicks from Cleveland, giving us a Clevelander's perspective on the Cleveland Cavaliers. What a novel concept, right? Three Clevelanders get on a podcast to talk about the Cavs. You're not going to find a better podcast talking about the Cavaliers than this one right here. It's a Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. We out of here. Peace.